How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is July 9, 2013 here at figure4online.com/WrestlingObserver.com. We got Raw to talk about tonight. A lot of news as well. And Dave, what's going on?
I don't know. You tell me. What's going on?
Well, Raw's going on.
Raw went on.
Thought it was a pretty good show.
It was good. It was good. Crowd was kind of dead in a lot of places, really, though.
Well, probably the same problem they've had for weeks now.
Yeah, I know, because the problem is that all the baby faces are all muddied up and nobody knows who to cheer for.
The main event was Punk and Orton, both baby faces, and it ended with a run-in with Daniel Bryan, who beat up both baby faces as a baby face, and no one had any idea what to make of any of this.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's right. That's why they didn't really react. There are all some very interesting finishes on the show, in the sense that they didn't even bother doing finishes in two of the matches. They just cut away and moved on to something else.
Two of them actually had no finish.
Yeah, the women's tag and the Del Rio Sin Cara match.
Well, let's get into this because there's a lot to talk about. Opened up with Vicky in the ring, ladder there, and she gave a big speech about the gut check gimmick she's going to be doing on later on tonight. And
of the ladder matches, mentioning the three greatest stars in ladder match history: Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon, and Triple H.
Yeah.
No
Triple H.
No Edge. No Christian. No, you know, CM Punk. No Jeff Hardy. I mean, I can see no Jeff Hardy. That makes sense, actually, but still.
She basically pleaded for her job and buried the fans while climbing a ladder. They had the referees hold it to make sure she didn't fall down, although the fans were chanting, "Fall!" which she didn't. So Lawler interrupted as she's doing her speech, and basically he said that he had just been informed that tonight the universe was going to be able to voice their opinion on the app. He said that they could vote pass or fail on whether or not Vicky should be given the role as the permanent general manager or if she should just be fired. And once she heard that the fans were going to be allowed to vote, she got very chipper. She gleefully announced that tonight we were going to have Henry versus Cena in a confrontation prior to the pay-per-view this coming weekend, and also Randy Orton versus CM Punk in the main event, and a bunch of Money in the Bank all-star matchups. And she tried to buy a pass grade, and she failed, coincidentally. There you go. Yeah, Daniel Bryan and Sheamus, they had a great match. Pay-per-view quality match, probably.
That match was really good. Great finish, too.
Yep, they went through two commercial breaks. Actually, one commercial break.
One commercial break, yeah.
And end of it saw Sheamus put Bryan in the clover leaf, and Bryan managed to kind of forward roll out from underneath the clover leaf and turn it into a small package and get the clean pin. So Bryan beats Sheamus. Bryan was over like a star in this segment. People went nuts for him. They went nuts for the finish. They chanted yes. They were going crazy. Him and Sheamus shook hands. Very interesting that at least here, later on they did show it, but usually when you have a cool finish, they show a replay. No replay here. Although later on in the show, they did show what happened, but I thought that was kind of interesting. But Daniel Bryan beats Sheamus. Real good match. We had AJ, actually, first we had a guy who went looking for the Wyatt family. And I don't mean backstage. They had a camera. He was on their ranch, I guess. And or he was heading to their ranch. First, he found two dudes who told him to go and look around, whatever that means. And they told him he'd know when he was there. We had AJ and Big E in a hallway. Making fun of Caitlyn. They're doing the gimmick now where Caitlyn is fat. That's the storyline. They're making fun of her for being fat. And Dolph came up, and this was the first Dolph AJ meeting since they've no longer been coming out together. And she gave him a hug, and he noted
he asked how come she hadn't been in his corner.
That's right. He noted that even though you have not been in my corner, I have been winning for 2 weeks.
Yeah, and they didn't answer why he wasn't in her corner, though.
No.
And Langston was.
So
he wasn't in Langston's corner.
Yep. She snuggled up to him and asked if he wanted to go all the way, and he said yes, all the way to the world championship. And And that was it. And they were never seen together again. So I guess, I don't know what this was. This is explaining.
They kissed and everything when it was over.
Sure.
So it's a way, you know, it's a way to, I guess, start their breakup instead of like the breakup that they had before where they just sort of broke up and didn't tell anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So now we get a violent breakup, probably leading to Langston against Ziggler down the line.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
We had the Shield, Reigns and Rollins, against Brodus Clay and Tensai.
I want to mention one thing. They did, throughout the show, they did these videos for Van Damme, which I actually think has been a... I think this building up of Van Damme has been great, you know, as far as just a marketing thing. Because so often they'll just, you know, they'll bring, you know, they won't have patience and they'll rush a guy back instead of, like, doing this long build. And, I mean, whether Van Damme will, you know, what level he will be in the long run, you know, will be determined by a lot of factors. But he's going to come back and they're going to blow the roof off the house for him on the first night. So it's going to, you know, he's going to at least seem like a superstar in this pay-per-view.
He did an interview and he noted that the first week of vignettes they did for him got him more over than his entire tenure in TNA. And he's right.
That's actually true, but...
he's right.
Yeah, but nobody gets over in TNA.
Yep.
I mean, it's just... I mean, some of it, you know, some of it is the fault of the company, but it's like, you know, it's like you... People aren't going to... You're in the secondary group. People are going to think you're in the secondary group. It's just one of those things right now. You know, I mean, it's, I don't know. I mean, he was over in TNA when he first got there for, you know, for a couple of months as far as, you know, at the house shows, the people went crazy for him and everything like that. And then he kind of settled down in Nowheresville because, you know, he was, I don't know, you know, he'd been in TNA for too long. And TNA, you just, it, you know, just takes the edge off everybody.
By the way, the show opened with a new Wyatt video, and it was awesome. So I'd throw that out there. Anyway, we had Shield and Tons of Funk, and it was too long. Really, to me, the story of this match was that when Roman Reigns is in there with guys who are average, like Brodus Clay, he's very much exposed, especially in a match that goes long.
I don't think Brodus Clay's average.
Below average?
You can say that yeah, he's below average. You can say that the Tensai is average.
Sure.
He was okay with Tensai, actually, but I thought Brodus Clay looked terrible, actually, and he was in the match a lot.
Yeah.
You know, Tensai came in and got the hot tag, which probably wasn't the way to do it, because I think that's why the match felt, you know, because I was saying the same thing. This match is going really long, and then it really wasn't. It was only 6 minutes. It just felt long because Brodus Clay.
Yeah, but when you've got the Shield, they should not be going 6 minutes with these guys. I understand that. Like,
I agree, but Brodus Clay slows down. Brodus Clay selling will slow down a match with anyone.
Sure, but I realize that they like to keep guys at a certain level. But this should have been just a squash match.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, 3 minutes.
Yeah,
and they should have had. Again, they should have Tensai do the bulk of the work. He's the better worker of the two.
Yeah, we had the guy looking for the Wyatts finding Brody Lee, Luke Harper, and he said, follow me. John Cena came out, and he had his face-to-face with Mark Henry. Henry came out and was very serious. John Cena was making jokes about how he... basically, Mark Henry said, I'm hungry, and... John Cena made a joke about how he should eat a Snickers bar. It sucked. So Henry stayed serious, told him I should kick your ass for that, but new Mark Henry here. And he explained that he was going to win this title. He'd never won the title before. He needed this title for his legacy. Cena got serious and said, listen, you did what you did. You lost the respect of the fans. Threw away, I guess he basically said that, you know, your family, you used your family to get this championship match. And if you don't win on Sunday, you've got nothing.
Yeah, he sold out his family and sold out all the fans. And
Mark Henry said, I don't care.
Man who needs a win.
I don't care about the fans. I don't care what anyone thinks. You're John Cena. You got to be a good guy. You got to do the right thing. I don't have to. I don't care. And long story short, he teased leaving, but then blindsided Cena. Cena fought back, tried to do the AA, but Mark Henry is very large and squished him. And then he lifted him up and squashed him with the World's Strongest Slam, left him for dead. So a...
Dropped the belt on him.
Which is, by the way, everybody, a very heavy belt. So I'm sure that sucked. But anyway, this was a by the numbers, but good segment.
Yeah. I mean, just a, you know, yeah, go home segment for a pay-per-view. A lot of the stuff on this show was not really what I would call go home for a pay-per-view to get you. Because I will say this. I mean, Cena and Henry was fine, but I don't know. I'm still not into that. It doesn't feel like a big main event to me. And the other matches on the pay-per-view, I'm sorry, I'm just not interested in the ladder match. I don't know what it is, but the more they show those guys, you know, I mean, like when you see Punk and Orton and they weren't that over, and Daniel Bryan getting all null, you know, it's just, I think that the, you know, the booking all the baby faces in one match and all the heels in another, I don't think it helped anyone. I mean, the world title Money in the Bank match, when those six guys were out there, I mean, I just couldn't get interested. I could care less who won that match. You know, you see those guys and it just didn't do anything for me.
We had the, first we had Curtis Axel and Randy Orton promo. Randy Orton basically said he may cash in on money Sunday
if Cena's in a vulnerable,
my brain,
or whoever the winner is.
That's right. He said if Cena happens to win and he happens to win, he may cash in. So there you go.
Yeah.
Curtis Axel and Chris Jericho. Miz is out there doing commentary. And
great as usual. Saying nothing.
He distracts Curtis. Curtis is nearly getting counted out, and Paul is screaming at him to get back in the ring. So he finally jumps back in the ring to break the count and is immediately hit with the Codebreaker and pinned. So that was kind of odd.
That's his first loss.
First loss, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of weird.
I presume this just is setting up, him beating Miz. But at the same time, it's like, if anything, it looked like it was setting up a breakup between him and Paul, which is ridiculous.
Yeah. Heyman also had makeup on to make it look like his eye was busted up.
So, yeah, the first loss by Curtis Axel under Paul Heyman's watch to set up the three-way.
What?
To set up the not three-way at the pay-per-view.
Yeah, they're not doing a three-way. Yeah, because Jericho's wrestling.
All the booking is leading to a three-way, except they're not doing a three-way, and they really did virtually nothing for the Ryback-Chris Jericho match.
They didn't do virtually. They did nothing.
Well, Ryback was in the building. But yes, you're right. They did nothing.
But he didn't do it. He was in the building hugging Vicky Guerrero.
Yeah. We had a segment backstage where all of the heels in the world title match, Money in the Bank match, are backstage, and long story short, they all hate each other, but they all hate Fandango equally as much, and so they told him not to do his thing. He did his thing, and Wade Barrett attacked him. He was beaten up, and
made Fandango look like freaking Zack Ryder there,
a complete geek.
Yeah, it was too bad. I mean, that concussion really ruined his momentum. I mean, you talk about, you know, that they...
I can't figure out why they get mad at a guy for getting a concussion, unless, like, the only thing I can think is if he was maybe taking a certain bump that they didn't like, and they told him to stop doing it, and he did it and got a concussion. And I'm not saying that happened, everybody. I'm not saying that happened. I'm just saying that's the only...
I don't think that's what happened.
I don't either, but I'm just saying that's the only reason I can think that they would be upset and hold it over a guy's head that he got a concussion.
No, I don't even know. I think that you know, like, you know, with Vince, guys are like your flavor of the week. And if you're gone, you know, he forgets about you. And I think that's what happened with Fandango, is he came back and, like, well, you know, he's moved on to a new flavor of the week.
So, yeah, that poor guy is...
He just came off looking like a complete Zack Ryder, you know, which just kiss of death. The other thing that's funny is, you know, Cody Rhodes was in South Africa.
Watch him win.
What?
Watch him win.
It's possible. Yeah. Look who's in it. He could win. Cesaro could win. I don't think Barrett's going to win. I don't think Rhodes or Sandow will win, although Sandow would probably have a better shot than Rhodes. Rhodes winning would shock me. Sandow winning wouldn't shock me.
Really? Why?
Because Sandow's done really well lately.
I guess, but as a guy with the briefcase,
I'm not sure that if it was up to me, I would have him pretty high on my list to win. I mean, I think Barrett may have the most top potential, but they've really done nothing with him, and he's, I don't know. Sandow was did real well in that Sheamus feud. Very entertaining. Yeah.
I seem to recall that there have been guys that have won the briefcase immediately after the company has been doing nothing with them forever.
Well, Jack Swagger did, and they made him world champion.
Yeah, so I figure Cesaro or Barrett.
It could be almost anyone because it's, you know, yeah. They may just, you know, whatever, go with someone like that. I thought it was interesting that Cody Rhodes over the last couple of days went to South Africa, and they asked him about his tag team, you know, with Sandow. And
yes.
He goes, you know, we're friends, but in fact, we are not a tag team anymore.
Yeah.
Which is probably about the, how many times do you figure he's heard that? 8 times by now?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. Or you guys aren't going to be a team anymore. And then he comes back and they're, in fact, introduced as a team. You know, you and your tag team partner.
We had Bray Wyatt enter, letting the reporter, inviting him in. That was it for the moment. Alberto Del Rio beat...
No, he didn't.
That's right. There was no finish. Alberto Del Rio and Sin Cara had a match. And in the middle of the match, Dolph's music hits. And he comes out and just totally kills the match dead. They're still wrestling, but he's doing a promo. He's burying Del Rio. He starts to do... and by the way, as this is all happening, Del Rio is being distracted regularly. And at least twice while he's distracted, Sin Cara rolls him up, but still can't pin him.
Yeah.
So Del Rio kicks out of all this stuff. And finally, Dolph is going to do the ring intro. And... Alberto can take no more. He rushes out there. He attacks, starts beating up Dolph Ziggler. It's a babyface, by the way. And then Sin Cara did a plancha and laid out Del Rio, and Ziggler left. And no announcement for who won. Del Rio laid out by a guy who's never on television, who, by the way, could never pin him, even with distraction. Ziggler doing a he's booked in a way that he could not be cheered, really. It's just like a baffling segment.
Yeah. They had some trouble with some of the house shows, too, as far as they did a house show over the weekend where a lot of people were cheering Del Rio. I don't really understand that. Who knows? I think Del Rio's doing too many super kicks, also.
Does do a lot of them.
Like, it just seems like
he's like a one-man ECW.
And he just throws a super kick whenever he runs out of an idea.
Yeah. Then we had the gut check, the job evaluation. Vicky and Brad are in the ring. And they call out Hunter, Stephanie, and Vince, all of whom come out to Vince's music. And they all sit at a desk, and Vicky's there. And Vicky proceeds to say that she should be the permanent GM because of all of the acquisitions, all of the big matches that she's made, and all of the people that have come in under her watch, such as The Rock, the return of Undertaker at WrestleMania, which Stephanie found particularly hilarious because his gimmick is that he always wins at WrestleMania. And Stephanie then notes that, yes, some of these people did come in under your watch, but you were not responsible for them, number one. And number two, a guy that you did actually bring in under your watch was Brock Lesnar, who nearly killed my husband and my father. And she tried to plead her case. So it goes to the judges eventually. And Vince wants Vicky as the permanent GM. Hunter thinks that Vince is out of his mind, that Vicky sucks, she's not entertaining, she's terrible at her job, and that she should be canned. And Vince and Hunter are arguing, and Hunter says, well, since Stephanie came up with this idea, let's let Stephanie decide. So Vince is like, I'd love to have my beautiful daughter decide. And Hunter's like, I would love to have my lovely wife decide. Both kissing up to her. And she, of course, says, we're going to ask the fans. So they go to the fans, and 75% vote nay that she should be fired. And Stephanie proceeds to fire her. Vicky threw the greatest fit of all time on the ground, screaming, crying, rolling around, throwing a fit. Stephanie and Hunter eventually bail. They can take no more. Vince is still in the ring. He announces that this is all the fans' fault. Vicky deserves better. She should not have been placed in this position, and so he is going to hire a new GM. He is going to give them what they deserve. He hires Brad Maddox.
Yeah, the idea is that Vince now hates the fans for not seeing Vicky's talent and not understanding that Vicky was great for business, and since they're that stupid, he's going to give them the worst general manager possible, and that in fact, is Brad Maddox. Which Brad Maddox, of course, being so stupid, didn't even realize what it was in his character.
Yeah.
And,
I actually like this segment. I thought Vicky was awesome.
Vicky was good. There was some good interplay in there, but I can't say I like the segment.
I am entertained by the Vince and Triple H by play back and forth. I'm less entertained by Stephanie.
Stephanie's not good in this role at all.
No. But I do think that Vince and Hunter going back and forth is entertaining. So I did like that.
They were both very good. Vince was better than Hunter, but he's the heel, so he has more to work with, I guess. Hunter was good.
So later in the show, by the way, Vicky is backstage. He's having a breakdown, and Vince is there, and Brad walks up, and he thanks Vince and tries to shake his hand, but Vince won't shake, and he just leaves his hand out there forever, and Vince tells him to put it away, and he's saying sorry to Vicky, and we'll always remember you and this and that, and she flips out, beats him up, pounding on him, and...
Brad Maddox, not Vince.
Well, in the process, she did ruin Vince's jacket, which he was not happy about, but Brad Maddox.
That was the punchline about how Vince was all caring and sympathetic, and then, you know, when she started crying on his jacket, he just didn't like that she was ruining his jacket.
And then even later, she's leaving, makeup running, so sad, and she runs into the Ryback. By the way, you'd never know watching the show, but he does in fact have a match with Chris Jericho on Sunday.
And I guess you would know he's a heel since he hugged Vicky, but he did absolutely nothing heelish.
No, he told her, Vicky, you don't deserve this. It's going to be all right. By the way, in the most wooden manner possible. And then he gave her a hug, and all I could figure is that Vicky is Ryback's new manager.
Could be, yeah, that makes sense. Because, I mean, it was pretty clear watching it that Vicky ain't going away.
Well, of course not. But Vicky and the Ryback, that's quite a duo. Quite a duo.
I don't dislike it at all. You know, I mean, Ryback needs someone to do the talking for him.
He sure does.
Vicky's got heat. So I don't know if it's the right heat, but it's some heat. And Ryback is kind of in a bad position where he needs something.
Kane beat Christian with a chokeslam.
This match got no reaction.
No, it was interesting because they have been building up the Wyatt family forever. And it appears that they have debuted him in the worst possible segment for ratings. So we'll see what happens. I know that they were happy with how the debut went, but if the segment loses like thousands and thousands and thousands of viewers, hopefully they don't take it out on these guys because
they won't yet. I mean, they're gonna, you know, whatever happens with them is gonna happen with them based on, you know, with their performance. Basically, it's not gonna be, you know, what happens the first week of ratings aren't gonna make a difference. Well, they build them up a lot. They really did a great job of making this like important. And they came out, and there was like a buzz at first when they came out, and they, you know, but it was in a dead segment, and you know, the fans were chanting Husky Harris, and I don't know, it just didn't, you know, there's nothing they did wrong, but it was like the crowd deflated pretty quick on them.
They played a video first of from the cabin or whatever, where the guy had gone to get an interview with Bray Wyatt, and Bray does a big promo, and then he blows out a lantern or whatever, and the lights go out on the video, and they go out in the building, and the music starts, and out they come, gets a big reaction right off the bat, like they're actually superstars, and they come down to the ring. And Husky, Bray Wyatt, blows out the lantern. Lights are completely dark. And when they come back on, his buddies are in the ring. Rowan and Luke Harper. They destroy Kane. Bray Wyatt's doing the gimmick that he does in developmental, which is he sits in the aisle on a rocking chair, rocking back and forth. And they destroy Kane. They lay him out outside. They take the steps. They supposedly ram the steps right into Kane's head, leaving him for dead. And then Bray goes over there as fans chant Husky Harris, and he poses by Kane. And I don't know if they're doing Wyatt family versus Kane and Undertaker at SummerSlam or what the story is.
I don't think it'll be Undertaker. I mean, I guess it's possible, but I don't think so. I mean, but I guess they could do it.
But one way or the other.
Undertaker was supposed to work with the Shield, if he's even going to be healthy, you know, because, you know, he's hurt, so I don't know.
He's always hurt.
Yeah, but he re-injured himself in that angle with the Shield.
Hmm. So there you go. They made their big debut. I thought it was pretty good. It was, I think the problem, if there was any problem at all, is that they built them up so well, and the videos were so awesome. And at the end of the day, it was two guys beating up Kane. You know what I mean? In a dead segment.
Well, the crowd wasn't really with it, which is nobody's fault. They were, because they weren't with a lot of stuff on this show. And that was one, I mean, you know, again, when Bray Wyatt first came out, I mean, there was certainly a buzz about, you know, these new guys and they've been built up and everything, but it didn't sustain when those guys came out. And also, well, you know, again, you know,
the problem is you would have had to have them out there with like chainsaws cutting people up for this to pay off the way it'd been built up.
Perhaps. I don't know. I mean, they devastated Kane, but.
Yeah, but it was like any other beating, except for the steps, I guess.
Yeah, dropping the steps and everything. They didn't look that great in the beatdown. I mean, Harper looked all right. I mean, Harper looked good. I guess Harper was fine. I mean, Rowan, you know, you can really see that there's going to be trouble with him in long matches and things like that.
We had Vicky.
By the way, the Bray Wyatt's promo before they came out, the final one, total Bugsy McGraw promo. It's, you know, when Bugsy McGraw was in Florida. So at least that's where, I don't want to say it's the inspiration, but it's, you know. And Bugsy McGraw got over pretty good as a heel first and then a babyface in Florida.
Him to get over pretty big.
Yeah, Bray Wyatt's going to end up as a babyface anyway. I mean, probably not soon, but, he, you know, that is the ultimate destination.
We had a Divas match.
Those
oh, my God.
Ryback and Vicky.
Yeah.
She was leading with all of her stuff.
Alicia and AJ against Caitlyn and Layla.
First 45 seconds of this was like just a disaster.
Alicia and Layla were so horrendous together in this match. Just an unbelievably bad duo here attempting to work a match. And the Bellas were out there on commentary. And AJ
Did
tagged
they say
in.
Of any importance?
Of course not. They're there to, they essentially were there to show off their cleavage and talk a little bit about Total Divas, I think. But I was busy trying to figure out what the hell I was watching in the ring. AJ and Caitlyn finally get in the ring and they're just going nuts. Breaks down into insanity. Caitlyn spears AJ outside.
That's
and
a great
then
spear.
Music plays.
Yeah. I mean, she ran around the ring, and it was just a great spear. God, they're making so much fun of her weight, it's not even funny.
That's all the... Yeah, actually, that was the Bella's role, was to just talk about how she's fat.
Yep.
That's nice.
Yeah, like when she did the sprint, they were just going like, well, at least she got some exercise, and... Yeah.
We had CM Punk doing a promo, talking about his match with Orton, which led to the match. At a long match, not a great match, it was a good match. Fans just weren't into the two babyfaces having a match together. They kind of had dueling chants early, but then after a while, it was just like, all right, Punk and Orton having a match. Cool. And that's exactly what it was. And finally, did a bunch of spots, and Punk hits his GTS. 1, 2, 3, pins Randy Orton. So as soon as he gets the pin, outruns babyface Daniel Bryan, who attacks babyface Punk, leading to bafflement from the fans. He then gets a ladder, and Orton is laid out with the ladder. And then he sets it up, climbs up, undoes the briefcase, starts his yes chant, gets some yes chants, but largely is, I don't know, It's just really strange. Usually they do like, you know, all the guys come out. Maybe they all do a quick spot. Someone's left, you know, standing at the end and he goes up and get the briefcase. But nope, this was just Brian beating up two baby faces that everybody liked and not getting over doing it. So very strange closing segment for the pay-per-view. I don't know what else to say about it. All right, so the pay-per-view is coming up, and we've got the two Money in the Bank ladder matches. Obviously, one is all baby faces, and the other is all heels. Mark Henry is facing John Cena for the WWE title.
I think they've done a good job in the sense of building it up to where you think there's going to be a title change. That aspect of it's been good. I'm just not sure about the match itself. In Philadelphia, so it could be, you know, a lot of ways it could go. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious Mark Henry's going to be cheered, though.
Oh, yeah. Alberto Del Rio and Dolph Ziggler for the world title, which...
I mean, they'll have a good match.
Ziggler should be very... I think he'll be super over here.
Yeah, he will.
As noted, the baby faces, Punk, Brian, Orton, Sheamus, Christian, Kane, and RVD in a Money in the Bank match, as well as all the heels, Wade Barrett, Cody Rhodes, Damian Sandow, Dean Ambrose, Fandango, Jack Swagger, and Antonio Cesaro in the other match. Curtis Axel versus The Miz for the Intercontinental title. Chris Jericho versus Ryback in a singles match. AJ versus Caitlin for the Divas title. And yes, on the free pre-show, it is The Shield versus The Usos for the tag team titles. So, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
G1. We talked about the G1 on a show that may never air, so let's go through it again.
Yeah, the A block is freaking awesome in the G1. Really, the lineups, I mean, there's so much talent in this thing. Every lineup is you know, every card is great, but the big cards, you know, actually there's the Osaka card, which is the iPay-per-view, is just a loaded up show. Let me get my notes here. It's Shinsuke Nakamura against Kota Ibushi, which is an interesting match. By the way, Kota Ibushi and Kazuchika Okada are going to be wrestling at Sumo Hall for the DDT promotion when they do their annual big show. And as soon as that match was announced, a lot of tickets moved. So for DDT, it's like this big dream match. It might end up being a championship match, but they can't announce it as a championship match yet because Okada still has his title defense with Devitt on July 20th. So if he wins that, that has got a good chance of being a title match. So anyway, Nakamura and Ibushi, which should be really good, and Ibushi and... you know, also very good for the tournament. Then Togi Makabe against Kazuchika Okada coming off of that great match that they just had. Tanahashi against Prince Devitt, also a pay-per-view rematch. And, you know, Tetsuya Naito and Minoru Suzuki, which will probably be awesome. Hirooki Goto against Lance Archer, which should be good. Tomohiro Ishii against Katsuyori Shibata, which actually could be kind of unbelievable. I mean, the way those two match up. That, you know, Satoshi Kojima and Davey Boy Smith Jr., okay. Yuji Nagata and Shelton Benjamin actually could be very good. Hiroyoshi Tenzan, Carl Anderson should be fine. Toru Yano and Yujiro Takahashi will be kind of there. So, but very, very strong lineup there. And then the 10th is, let me just see the 10th, which is the next to last day of the round robin. What they're doing, they're not going to do a final four here. It's only going to be, they're going to do the round, the thing where most likely, like, they'll do parity booking all through, everyone will beat everyone type of thing. And then at the end, they're going to do a bunch of matches, and those matches will determine, you know, who gets in. And the guys who are ahead are probably going to be doing a lot of losing, which is kind of a weird way to book, but that's what they've been doing for their tournaments. But the 10th, which is... I don't know that the 10th will be an iPay-per-view. The 4th will be. I think the 11th will be as well. But they're going to have Tanahashi and Okada main eventing Sumo Hall again. Naito against Nakamura, which is a potentially great match. Goto against Shibata, which will be their fourth meeting, because they're doing that on the next pay-per-view on the 21st, and they're coming back with it on this show. So hopefully we'll get to see that, the show. Ibushi and Suzuki, which is a weird style clash match, but there you go. Makabe and Ishii, probably good. Yano and Shelton Benjamin, probably be all right. Tenzan, Lance Archer, so-so. Carl Anderson against Takahashi should be fine. Prince Devitt, Davey Boy Smith Jr. should be, should be good, actually. And then the Sumo Hall show, they're going to have Akebono and Kazushi Sakuraba against Yoshihashi and Izuka and, Tori Yano against Minoru Suzuki, which should be, well, actually, who knows what's going to happen, because this is where the under guys usually beat the top stars. Nakamura against Shelton Benjamin, rematch. Nakamura won the first meeting, so Shelton could very well win this one, unless Nakamura is going all the way. And, don't know what's going to happen. I would have thought Nakamura actually had a good chance of winning this thing, but considering where he's in the card, maybe not. Naito, Carl Anderson should be very good. Some of these matches are going to be short because of the time needed for the A block against B block winner. And those two guys, whoever they are, since they're probably going to do a 20-minute plus main event, they're probably not going to do another 15-minute match. So their matches will probably be fairly short. Nagata Takahashi is fine. Tenzan Ibushi, Archer, Davey Boy Smith Jr., which is of course the tag team partners against each other, which is always good. Kojima and Okada, it's okay. Goto and Ishii should be great. Makabe against Devitt should be good. And Tanahashi against Shibata, which I can't believe, it's kind of weird that they're giving that away in G1. I mean, it's really weird to me how, like I said, the A block, hold on, do I have the actual, I do have it right here. The A block is absolutely loaded, because what's going to happen is all these guys are going to be going against each other in a singles match. So it's Tanahashi, Makabe, Goto, Kojima, Okada. Who's this? Ishii, Archer, Davey Boy Smith, Prince Devitt, and Shibata. So you've got, Devitt, Shibata, Okada, Tanahashi, all in the same block. Everyone in that block really, is strong. The other block would be the one with everybody I didn't mention. So it's going to be Tenzan, Nagata, Naito, Nakamura, Toriano, Yujiro Takahashi, Suzuki, Shelton Benjamin, Kota Ibushi, and Carl Anderson. So, I mean, that's a good block, too, but the A block is just an absolute killer block. Lots of first-time matches throughout the week. Probably the best tournament this year.
And obviously all of the New Japan shows, ustream.tv/NJPW. You can actually get the Kizuna Road show right now, which we also tried to get this weekend, but that failed. It's up there right now. Buy for $20. So head up there and check that out. Apparently the main event was awesome. The, Ronda Rousey almost had her fight move, but then Dana decided not to move the fight. What's going on with this this fight?
Well, what happened is I think that he sees that the Weidman-Silva rematch is going to be really, really big. Because of that, he doesn't want it the day before the Super Bowl because, it'll get buried as far as major sports news. So he was kind of thinking that Rousey and Tate on the day before the Super Bowl might be kind of a novelty gimmick type thing to where, because they're in Newark, the Super Bowl's in East Rutherford, so everyone's going to be around. That's one of the reasons they're running the show there. Well, they're running the show there actually because Fox really wanted for them to run a show the night before the Super Bowl in the same location, same market, so they're doing it. So that was kind of the thought, but then I think that it's just so long. I mean, Rousey and Tate have been off. Tate not as long, but Rousey since February through December. That's a really long layoff to begin with. So I think that he just felt that they needed to keep it there. There's, you know, a big advantage of Weidman and Silva running it in Vegas instead of Newark. And there's arguments on both sides. But, the argument to run it in Vegas is you can get a lot of, interest and money from the casinos, especially the MGM Grand for a site fee with, Weidman and Silva. That's a huge fight. More than Rousey and Tate, and more, obviously, more money than they're going to be able to make if they put it in Newark. Of course, there's upsides of, putting it in Newark because it's not too far from Long Island where Weidman lives. I don't know exactly what's going to happen. Weidman's pretty banged up as well. So, we'll see. There's a lot of different, you always have the injury situation as well. There's a lot of different potential matches that they can do later this year. Kind of like right now, we're in the flat part of the timing after the Silva thing. We got championship match, but it's Aldo's championship. It's Benson Henderson's championship against guys that aren't really that over. Zombie's over for the featherweight, but it's not going to be a big pay-per-view match. So we're kind of at a little lull, and then they kind of pick up, with a September through December run, where they kind of are hoping for big numbers every time out. I don't know if they're going to get them. I think George St. Pierre and Johnny Hendricks is kind of a guarantee. I think Rousey and Tate will probably do well. There is concern about Rousey and how she's going to come across to the public on Ultimate Fighter. So we'll see how that goes. Of course, they could, if they're that concerned, change the editing, and no one will be any wiser for it.
Maybe that's not possible.
Yeah, it's always possible. You can always eliminate any drama scenes if you want.
I don't know.
They've done it with other people, so there's.
I know, but I don't know what it's like there. He called it pure fucking mayhem every single day.
Yeah, but it's not mayhem 24 hours a day. There's parts of mayhem. But I'm sure they want to keep some of the drama.
You got to have some show.
Yeah, they want the rivalry.
People training all the time.
They want the rivalry, but I think that they don't want, Ronda, whatever Misha comes across as, I don't think it really matters because she's not the one, and they don't expect her to win. By the way, Misha Tate said that she's, in fact, if she loses, she claims that she will shoot herself in the head before she leaves the octagon if she loses to an armbar. She can lose, but not to an armbar, is what she's saying.
Which, this is not going well.
Hopefully they do not give her a gun if she loses to an armbar.
The odds, by the way, for the rematch, already -200 for Anderson Silva.
Yeah, I think it's a little long. I thought the odds were long the last time.
It's like they didn't fight.
What?
It's like they didn't fight.
Yeah, I know. But you know what? I mean, if you watch the fight, though,
I do expect him to win, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, if you watch the fight, you kind of get the impression that Anderson Silva's the better fighter, even though he lost. So, that if anything...
Dumber fighter, but...
Yeah, but, he looked really talented. I mean, it wasn't like... Weidman did win the first round, except for in one judge's card. How... Some of those judges' cards on that show. Unbelievable. But that one... And that wasn't even the worst one, but that's a bad one. I mean, the Weidman took him down, had him down for almost the entire round, was beaten on him on the ground. Silva did get up, and when he got up, what did he do? I mean, he just, put his hands down and taunted him, and you know what I mean? He did nothing to win a round.
We have a 8 million questions here. I want to make sure we get into these. Here we go. In 1998, when Triple H took over DX, the fans turned DX face. Was the plan always to turn DX face, or was this to elevate Triple H to main event against Austin?
I think that the feeling was that they were going to end up as faces. I mean, I knew they were going to end up as faces when they were heels. I thought it was pretty obvious, so I think that they were going to go with it, and they were going to do the turn, and, they'd figure out. I don't think they had a set plan that we're going to do a turn on this day when they started the group. But the idea that they would eventually be baby faces, they should have figured that out. And, when the time was right, make the turn.
And looking at the history of ratings for the original ECW on TNN and Impact on Spike, it seems both had a very similar audience size, ranging from 0.9 to a 1.3. Is it just a coincidence, or do you think it could actually be largely the same viewers, and there are about 1 million to 1.5 million fans who will watch non-WWE wrestling that have been around since 1999?
Well, the thing is that ECW had a far less favorable time slot. They were 8 to 9 on Friday, TNA 9 to 11 on Thursdays, far preferable. The one thing I do want to say is the TNA July 4th number was shockingly good. I mean, absolutely shocking, which tells me that they've got...
It's virtually identically the same as every week.
I mean, they've had, you know, well, I mean, it's you know, it's the number that they did against, you know, major NBA games. I mean, it's you know, but I mean, they've been doing, they're probably averaging 1.1 million, so they were very far, they're very, very close to their average on July the 4th, which tells me that the audience... The key is the audience that's loyal to TNA doesn't leave the house. Because, you know, July 4th is a night that you leave the house. That's why TV shows do terrible. That's why TNA was expected to do terrible, and they really didn't do terrible. So, you know, and a lot of that is the TNA audience is very old. By the way, we never talked about this, but not this past Friday, because we don't have the info in yet for this past Friday SmackDown. That'll come in tomorrow. But the SmackDown of a week ago Friday... They had, I think it was 2.26 million viewers, and exactly 1.13 million, exactly 50%, were above the age of 50, which is amazing when you think about it. You know, like, they're catering, because Raw, it's usually 50-50, but below and above 40. But for SmackDown, and SmackDown's more of a kid's show, because it's Friday night, and as it turned out, you know, the it's skewing so old. You know, I mean, that's older than like some real sports do.
Maybe it's a lot of grandparents babysitting the youngsters. Mom, dad go out Friday night. Kid wants to watch Hornswoggle.
Not too many kids that, when you're talking about 2.26 million total viewers.
Well, I don't know what to tell you then.
Yeah.
Is it possible this is an aberration, or is this
No, it's an aberration, but it's, you know, usually the split's around 46, 47.
So this was not the July 4th show, this was a week earlier.
No, it would be the show that was on whatever it is, the June 20 whatever that Friday was, the 28th, June 28th show.
I don't know.
So, you know, it's another example of WWE has an audience, and they're not writing for that audience.
This question is about Kane's 24-hour title reign in 1998. Why was it just 24 hours? Did something go wrong?
No, that's what was booked. You know, they were hot-shotting the title a lot back then, you know, around. They just wanted him to have, you know, he was given the title so they could draw a rating with Austin challenging for the title and winning the title on television the next day. So that's all that was. It was to build up a rating. And it actually is, as I recall, I think that they did that again with Undertaker and Austin, which did their huge rating. But this one also, as I recall, did a very big rating. So it was a formula that worked.
It's an odd question here. What is wrong with Triple H's forehead? It was very bad and noticeable during the Vicky firing segment. I didn't notice anything. He buzzed his head and he left the front a little bit longer. If you're talking about all the wrinkles, he's always had those.
His forehead looks pretty weird. I mean, it really does.
I'm sure
it comes from the territory.
All gigged up?
Protruding forehead bones. Kind of like Ryback.
Sure. Well, you know.
But it's nothing. That's nothing new. It's been like that for years.
All right. How come WWE no longer does the summer tour of places like Rhode Island and Cape Cod, and when and why did it stop?
Probably they just, you know, I mean...
Didn't that last until just a few years ago?
Yeah, they were doing it just until a few years ago. They dropped it and let TNA have it, and they took it back because TNA had it, and maybe they were, I don't know, you know, whatever the word was, maybe it's something they didn't want TNA to have, and then... I don't think they were, you know, it could be that the people who did the tour, you know, got tired of, you know, didn't want to do wrestling anymore. I don't know. Or it just could be that, you know, the grosses for those shows were terrible by WWE standards. I don't think they were money-making. Given the expenses that WWE has running a show these days, you know, again, the costs probably were lower for a show like that, but maybe, I mean, I you know, again, when they rarely do less than $100,000 for a show, and in buildings like that, I mean, you're talking about, you know, selling out at 60, 70,000. So even with a sellout, you're doing way, way, way less money than you would make anywhere else. So it probably wasn't cost effective, and, you know, takes down your averages, and, you know, just that's probably the reason is, you know, again, they're, you know, the places were too small, and they can draw more people at other places.
When they shot localized promos in the 80s WWF, where were they shot? At arenas, or did everyone fly to Stamford?
I definitely didn't do it in Stamford. They sent, you know, Gene Okerlund around, and they would do it at, sometimes they would do it at house shows, and sometimes they would do it at the hotel before or after the house show, and set up a studio in the hotel.
In Bret Hart's book, he talks about there being a list of five or so guys to get the title from Ric Flair in 1992. Any idea who the others were, and why do you think Bret ultimately was picked to win the title?
I know why Bret was picked to win the title. There's two reasons. You know, what happened was that Ric Flair was the champion, and Ultimate Warrior and Davey Boy Smith were essentially two of the top baby faces at the time. Ultimate Warrior was pretty much, I guess, considered the top babyface. Davey Boy had beaten Bret at SummerSlam, so Davey Boy was kind of slotted, maybe ahead of Bret. But, you know, Bret, I think Bret actually was ahead. But they're like number one and number three babyface leaves, you know, instantly. So, you know, in doing so, the feeling was we've got to make a babyface start, like, now. Immediately, because, you know, Hogan wasn't around at this point, and Bret Hart and Yokozuna, I think it was, or was it Bret Hart and Ric Flair? Bret Hart had headlined a match in Los Angeles that did very well just a couple of days before this decision was made. So that helped him. The other thing that helped him was he was getting a lot of fan mail, more than anyone else in the company at the time. So that helped out. As far as the other people, I don't think... I mean, there were, you know, like Tito Santana was one of them, but the reality is as I remember it, there was really no strong argument for anyone but Bret at that point to be the number one guy. He just was. I mean, it's a funny story that when that happened, you know, when they call, they go, you know, Bret, we got a meeting with you. And at the time, you know, Bret winning the championship, you know, of course, you know, the kind of guys they picked for that title were, you know, top guys. Bret was a little bit below that level at the time in fans' eyes. I mean, Bret winning the championship was a huge shock. I mean, they rushed it. They did it in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan with it was filmed, but they never aired it, which is really weird. You know, it wasn't on television. It wasn't on pay-per-view. They just rushed it in a dark match at a TV taping. You know, instead, you know, I can't imagine why you would put it in a regular match. It baffles me, you know, especially because the win was, you know, seeing the title change should have been very important in getting Bret over, but they didn't show it. Nobody saw it. I think it's been on DVD release years later, but that means nothing. You know, there was, there's no other choice, really. So that's why, you know, that's the deal.
All right, one last question here. This is kind of interesting. He says, what are your thoughts on the impact of the Weidman victory on the upcoming GSP Hendricks buy rate? Do you expect an increase in buys, given we are coming off a major upset, and that some who may have missed history on Saturday would purchase the next event involving a long-reigning champion, so as not to miss what could be another historical moment?
I don't think that it's going to be a major difference. I think it could. You're going to do as good as your last week of hype. You know,
for some reason, I don't feel like people see GSP's reign anywhere near what Anderson Silva's reign was.
Well, no, because it wasn't record breaking. Even though, in some ways, GSP's run is actually, to me, I mean, it's far more impressive than Anderson's because he beat much tougher guys. And it's almost, it's not quite as long, but it's almost as long. But and also, GSP was more dominant in his fights, but GSP didn't finish, and Anderson finished almost all of his wins. I mean, so that is a difference. You know, Anderson did get finishes. So in that sense, it's more impressive. But in other senses, GSP, you know, you're talking about in this entire run, you know, which goes back to the Koscheck fight in 07. So we're coming up on almost 6 years now, because that was later in, I think that was, I'm trying to remember the date of that fight. But anyway, you know, we're coming up on, so the thing is, in that reign of all those guys, I mean, there was only one guy he fought that wasn't, like, great. Well, maybe you could say Matt Serra, who was the champion, because Matt Serra wasn't great, but Matt Serra was good. And then the other one that I would say was not great would be Dan Hardy, who was, you know, was the recipient of one of the great build-up jobs in that company history. You know, and you know, to his credit, was a great personality. You know, I mean, they you know, remade Dan Hardy as this guy who's super strong, who's practicing getting up from takedowns and is a knockout killer. And, you know, Dan Hardy really isn't a knockout killer, although he had a great knockout before that, and he's had one or two since. Dan Hardy, in fact, went on a pretty big losing streak starting with that fight. But, George, again, not finishing, has been held against him. In some cases, it's weird because, like, the Dan Hardy fight, I mean, he, you know, any normal man would have submitted in that arm bar that he put him in, but for whatever reason, Dan Hardy didn't feel it. He's got Gumby arms or something, but he didn't feel it. And then the Koscheck fight, I mean, you know, Koscheck had to lie to the ref and everyone, because if the ref knew how bad his eye was, he stopped it, you know, very early on, and he should have stopped it very early on with the benefit of hindsight, but, you know, I mean, Koscheck was, you know, pretending, you know, he didn't want it stopped, so he was saying he was fine, but he wasn't fine. So, I mean, there's two finishes right there that, you know, and other guys, again, you know, like he didn't finish Fitch and he didn't finish Koscheck in their matches, but those guys are pretty hard to finish at that point in their careers. They might not be now, but, you know, Damian Maia had Fitch's back for three rounds and couldn't finish him. So, you know, it's not that they weren't easy guys, and you know, GSP gave Fitch the beating of a lifetime. It's not the same exact aura, but the reality is that the GSP Hendricks pay-per-view number should be better than, you know, because GSP is a much bigger pay-per-view draw than anyone right now.
All right, everybody, on that note, we're going to wrap it up. We have a lot of stuff coming up in regards to the Weidman show this weekend. New Observer, new Figure Four coming up. And back issue of the Observer is going to be up as well. We got a lot of radio shows coming up. Dave's going to be back on Wednesday with a brand new show as well. And tons of stuff up on the front page. So check it all out, everybody. And we'll talk to you again after a while.